This podcast is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Visit darkmyths.org to discover more shows like this one. The darkness awaits.
Hello and welcome back to the Not Alone podcast. I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso. And it's been a while.
It's been a hot minute.
Yeah. I forgot what we do next already.
Yeah, me too. I kind of, as I started it, I was like, wait, is this how we start the podcast?
Yeah, typically this is, you hit a certain button. I don't even know what the key is.
Well, no, I know how to physically start the podcast.
Oh.
I meant the actual, like, magical incantation we say that opens up the realm.
Yeah, yeah.
That gets the people who look like us to come sit in the chairs and do the podcast.
What if you were wrong and now we're on a completely different timeline?
The darkest timeline.
No, I'm not. I don't have a goatee yet. I don't have a felt goatee.
That's fair. I went to Scotland. That's where I went. For anybody, I've mentioned it multiple times.
Yes.
But for anybody who kind of lost the verb there.
You also mentioned about a certain haunted location that you were venturing to.
Yeah, but we're not actually talking about that this
week.
We're
not talking about... What are we even talking...
I know. Jason doesn't know because I didn't send him the notes. I was going to...
Is this another talking animated thing? Is this something that can talk and speak?
Like Jeff the Mongoose?
That shouldn't be talking and speaking?
No. No, it's like an actual thing.
Because if it's a gargoyle, I'm down.
No.
Anything else? No.
I saw some gargoyles.
Nice!
Like on castles and things.
Yeah.
But, oh, that's true. I saw castles.
That's one thing about America that kind of blows.
You got no castles.
We don't have castles.
These castles were good castles.
Castles are cool.
As well. They were astounding. We're not a travel podcast, though. So that's kind of what I was worried about and was dealing with is how do I make an episode about the places I went to where I can, like, talk about what I did, but not just make this into, like, a travel blog. You know, that's the problem. So I think I found a pretty good solution. We'll talk about it. Here pretty much right now.
Like a murder mystery? Yeah.
I mean, kind of. Basically.
Murdered by a ghost?
In both of the locations that I went, I spent my time primarily in the village of Anstruther, in the Kingdom of Fife, which is fantastic. And then...
Is that north, south, east, west? Where is that?
It's on the eastern coast.
Okay.
It's like an hour and a half north of Edinburgh. It's across the Firth of Forth. This is what I learned. And it's a little bit north.
Oh my gosh.
It's a little
okay.
bit north.
Okay.
It's not like the Highlands north. When you're at a place, you just walk everywhere. Once you're there. So like in Fife, we stayed in the village of Anstruther. We're going to make this a travel blog.
And
if you don't like it, I'm sorry. There will be discussions of ghosts in a minute, I promise. But in Fife,
I'm excited.
We stayed in the village of Anstruther, which spans about a mile up the coast.
What is it?
A village?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it like population size? Is it a village that hasn't been touched since the 18th century? Like,
no, it's not like...
Because I expect everything outside of London to be old.
It is old. Like, it's quite old. But it's not like it hasn't been touched in all time. It's got a population of 3,600, is what this is telling me.
Okay. So, rural community.
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh, yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah, cool. There. It's a fishing village, is what it is. Or it used to be.
Mm.
It looks like... It originally had, like, a settlement there in the 1200s.
So wait. Back it up.
Okay.
Fishing village.
Yes.
How was the fish and chips?
Literally, they have a world-famous fish and chips place that was, like, 5 minutes from where
sure.
we were staying.
How was it?
It was amazing. It was truly amazing. I had it, like, 3 times, maybe just twice. But we were only there for, like, 4 days.
What fish did they do?
Haddock.
Haddock.
Mm-hmm. Fresh caught, like, an hour ago, haddock. It was amazing. And they take... For all of our UK listeners, I'm sorry, because we're just going to be fascinated by your mundane things you do. They take malt vinegar, and they put that on their chips, their French fries, and it's amazing.
Is it?
It's so good. It is like my life goal to move back to Anstruther, or even there's a little place a mile up the coast called Pittenweem, which is a beautiful little village where they used to keep their witches. And
and this is where we keep our witches in the coop here. That's
literally what it was. There was a cave called St. Fillian's Cave, and there was like a monk there. But then at another point, that's where they kept their witches. And then we passed by the rock where they threw their witches into the sea. It was quite astounding.
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay.
So that's what we're dealing with. That's where we are.
We just miss that kind of history.
You know? We just don't have it, really. We have the Salem witch trials. That's like the one big thing. Yeah, but that's like
the very, very end, you know?
These people had witches all their lives. And we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Sam, they're not... they haven't been around for 500 years themselves, have they?
Depends on who you ask. We're going to talk more about witches next week, because this week we were going to do like a one episode on Scotland and Scottish ghosts, but now we're going to make it two episodes. Because like I was saying, the
are they all poltergeists?
No. Ooh. No, and we'll see about that in a moment here, but darn. No, there's actually more, I would say, like low-level just visual apparitions than anything else, than poltergeists or anything there.
Gotcha, so just admin positions.
Yeah, pretty much. And we're going to talk primarily of one town in Fife, which is the town of St. Andrews. And then next week, we're going to talk about Edinburgh, where we stayed for just a few days. But they have some good history there as well. So this is going to be a bit of a history lesson mixed with ghosts. So we'll just see how it goes. Yeah,
the only thing I know of Edinburgh is Jeremy Clarkson drove to it once in an episode of Top Gear. So
wow, that's surprisingly little, even for like a normal person.
Where is it? What is it? We'll get there. Anyway. We'll get
there. That's next week.
Sam.
This week,
ghosts.
So, Anstruther is beautiful and quaint, and I had people.
Did you meet a ghost?
No, I had Sam. People tell me, come to my house. I have a ghost, which is just really indicative of how it is over there. It's just part of life, and you know, again,
it's always foggy.
Well, that's true, and that definitely lends itself to ghostly apparitions. But it just seems like they are more in touch with this supernatural paranormal side of things. They're not as hesitant, or they're not as reluctant to say, yeah, my house has a ghost or this or that, as we are in the States. It's a cultural thing. I'm not saying that every Scottish person believes in ghosts wholeheartedly.
I know, but it's already really morbid, but how is their outlook on death? Because like here in the States,
I didn't like sit there and be like, how do you feel about dying?
Yeah, like good man? But like, you know what I mean though. Here in the States, like we hardly ever talk about our own mortality or and preparations after that kind of stuff.
The oldest thing that we have in this country that's not First Nations people, the oldest colonial things we have are from like the 1600s, and even then we don't have much of those left. The majority of when we think of like something really old, the majority of it's from the 1800s, 1700s,
I think Wild West. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas for them, literally St. Andrews is a town that is built around the ruins of a cathedral that was built in the 1100s.
Like, gosh, that sounds so sweet.
It's truly astonishing. And I think it creates a more practical idea of death and history itself, because they're just surrounded by it.
Yeah.
The houses are hundreds of years old. The rocks are hundreds of years old. Like, everything is old there.
Yeah, that has to be an interesting impact about how you perceive your moment in it compared to everything else around you.
And that's really, I think, why, just speaking off the cuff, why I think that it is more accepted for there to be ghosts in these places, because
a continuation.
And especially in some of these places, like we'll talk about, St. Andrews is a bloody city. It's a very, very, acts of violence have occurred there for a very long time. But I think that just being surrounded by that gives them the opportunity to open up more to the idea of, well, yeah, there probably are ghosts, because I know for a fact that people have been living and dying here for the last 1,000 years. Like, the chance that one of those spirits is going to get caught in the soul trap or whatever is totally normal.
So,
And in St. Andrews alone, they
Why aren't there any dinosaur ghosts?
What the hell do you think Loch Ness is, man? Nessie is the ghost. You said it, man.
Nessie is seals.
Nessie is the ghost.
Nessie's a trick.
Of a plesiosaur.
No. I literally...
You literally just asked the question.
Never came out of my
mouth. I just told you. That's the ghost of the dinosaur.
Okay. Nessie. And Champ as well.
Oh, sure.
All of them.
All of them.
All of them.
All of them.
Bigfoot?
No. He's his own thing.
Okay.
We don't talk about Bigfoot. He can be his own thing. We don't talk about Bigfoot.
But anything reptilian. I get too
mad. So, and in a place like St. Andrews, they have over, and this is just being conservative, and a figure that I found in a book that was published in the late 1800s, over 80 known and named spirits and apparitions.
Are some of them just, like, really plain everyday names?
Well, the idea of it is that, and we'll talk a little bit more about it here, is just that they're all around you all the time. They're just there. You know, and I don't know the names of all of them, but they're pretty
a little awkward.
They're pretty generic. They're things like the nun and
that's the not white even lady. A name.
Well, no,
it's a
titled.
That's yeah, exactly.
I don't mean that
that's
they
so sad.
Named every single
that
person.
That was Nancy over there.
That's Nancy the nun.
Yeah,
she's a sad gal. So we're gonna get into it now. After about 25 minutes, no, it hasn't been that long.
I was really hoping we're already into it.
No. This has all been introduction. I have the notes here. You don't have the notes. So you didn't assuming. Know where we get into it. This is where we get into it. Okay. St. Andrews. Okay.
Yeah.
The town of St. Andrews. All right. This is a place where I went multiple times. It's probably like I don't want to say this because I don't have any real conception, but it's one of the bigger things in the Kingdom of Fife. And St. Andrews is famous for many things. It is it houses a prestigious university, one that's been in operation since 1411. It's one of the oldest in the Western world. Its cathedral, like I said, has accepted pilgrims since the 1100s and still stands as the largest religious structure ever mm-hmm. built in all of Scotland. And the cathedral and the city around it, and they also have a castle. We're not really going to talk about the castle. It also, same kind of time period there, though. And this cathedral was the home of the relics of Saint Andrew. And Saint Andrew was the first apostle of Christ. He is the patron saint of Scotland. Do you know the Scottish flag? It's blue. It has the white lines. Those lines.
The X in it.
Yeah, that X is the cross of Saint Andrew. He was crucified on that kind of a structure.
Oh, so yeah. It's like the from Game of Thrones, the bad guys, the Boltons, the flayed man.
Kind of, yes. That same sort of pinup, if you will.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm never going to think of pinups the same way. Yeah, that's bad.
Now, St. Andrews, though, this town of about 16,000 people, like we said, it's home to, in a conservative estimate, about 80 known apparitions. Now, some other more modern estimates put that figure at over 400 independent, but also corroborated accounts.
Yeah, okay.
Of spirits.
Sure.
Now, I promise that I'm not getting paid for anything that we say from here on out, except for the actual advertisement that we're going to do.
Like, are we?
No.
Oh, okay.
We'll get paid by our sponsor, ZipRecruiter, who we'll talk about in a minute. But I'm going to be talking in depth about the work of a man who we met on our trip and who actually led us through a walking tour of St. Andrews, a ghost tour, if you will. And this man's name was Richard Falconer, or Falconer? I don't know. It's Falconer. I'm going to say Falconer, because that sounds
dope. That sounds better.
Yeah, right? It sounds good.
And because it sounds better, we're going to say it's
that's what we're going to do.
That now, sounds like a real name, sure.
Falconer is an extremely earnest individual, and he is impressively informed about the city of St. Andrews, and especially the spirits themselves that reside in it. He touts himself as one of the foremost researchers of the paranormal in Scotland and the entire world. He says that no one has ever done as much research on a single paranormal subject or area as he has done in St. Andrews. He's written over 1,200 pages on the spirits in St. Andrews itself, which he claims is home to...
So you met the right guy.
I met the right guy.
Okay.
Yeah, this guy, he... Like, the only word to adequately describe him is earnest. Extremely earnest. He truly believed everything he was saying. Faulkner has been researching this area for about 5 decades. And through his research, he has uncovered historically significant information regarding the town of St. Andrews that has been lost to the ages before his work. It's truly astounding stuff, and I promise we're going to get on with this information in a moment. But really, truly, I cannot recommend enough that if you're ever in the area, or even relatively close, go out of your way to see this tour. We're going to put links to it and all of that. It's
how long was the actual tour?
It was about an hour and a half.
Okay.
It was very good.
All on foot, I'm assuming.
Okay. But it's not that bad. Like I said, everything's very, very close.
Yeah.
It was a walking tour of maybe 2 to 2.5 miles.
Okay.
So go out of your way to see this tour. It's truly worth it. And while we're going to actually talk in depth about Faulkner and his actual investigations and all of that, we're not scratching the surface on anything. We're not going to scratch the surface on what his research has done and what he has found. And we're definitely not going to scratch the surface on the 80 to 400 spirits and apparitions that are haunting St. Andrews. We're only going to focus on a couple of them. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Faulkner strikes this beautiful balance between me, the true believer, and you, the skeptic, which I know is hard for you to accept because he does believe in ghosts.
I just want proof, man. How hard is that?
Something that I realized is that by design, and I realized this on his tour, and it's not something I've ever really thought of before, which is stupid because this is our 67th
proof
episode.
Is relative?
Not even that. Oh. It's that it's not for you. If it doesn't happen to you, it doesn't matter for you. If you...
That is also very true.
If you...
I'm pretty sure I said that to you.
If you are supposed to have... No, you did not. If you are supposed to have this mindset, if you're supposed to believe in ghosts or spirits or aliens or whatever, it's going to happen to you, and you're not going to need the proof. Beyond that, it needs to be a deeply personal thing. It doesn't need to be worldwide. It doesn't need to be proved beyond the shadow of a doubt. It just needs to be true enough for you personally. So, and like, it's true enough for me. I've had my own experiences. That's fine. Jason has not. Maybe one day he will. We'll see.
God, I hope I can record multiple angles.
You're not going to, because it just needs to be true enough for you. So
that would be true enough.
And therefore, you never will. In any case, though, the interesting thing that he does, as opposed to accepting the stories and accepting them at face value, is he has gone through and he actually strips it down a little bit. He says, well, that doesn't sound very likely. That doesn't sound very feasible. I don't see the evidence for this. I see the evidence for this. And while he does definitely believe in the paranormal and the supernatural, he does a great job of not trumping it up. He says it right off the bat. He says, I don't exaggerate my stories because they're terrifying enough as they are.
Yeah, he's not like trying to be a showman or trying to sell you on it.
Exactly. But that's not to say that it's not an entertaining tour.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know,
but
and he's a really funny guy as
it's
well.
It's not like he's a medium is all I'm saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And he's not. We actually went on 3 different ghost tours in my time in Scotland. And or I guess 1 ghost tour, 1 witchcraft tour and another ghost tour. And honestly, his was the most down to earth, but also the most compelling out of all of them. Okay, so also buy his books. There's a lot of them. They're great. The one we're using today is a St. Andrews mystery. But like I said, I think he's got over 1,200 pages on the paranormal and Fife itself. So now the spirit of the unknown, it's alive. It's well in Scotland. I'd say there are more ghosts per capita there than any other place we've researched. much less anywhere else I've been. And tradition still weaves a powerful and beautiful thread in the tapestry of the area, and ghosts are as Scottish as golf and whiskey. It's baked into the haggis itself.
That's Scottish.
Yeah. And St. Andrews is perhaps the best place to experience the Scottish paranormal. Like I said, one of the most striking elements of the town is the cathedral. It's probably the most striking element of the town. It was built in 1158 and became the seat of power for the Catholic Church in Scotland until the time of the Reformation in the 16th century. Finally, it fell into disrepair because the town council was like, well, if you need rocks, there's a cathedral right there. And so everybody just goes and takes rocks.
It's weird how often that seems to occur.
It literally happens with the castle down the road. The same thing. This big, beautiful castle, and the council's like, well, if you still need rocks, there's rocks right there. And then at a certain point, we realize, oh, God, we're destroying history.
Yeah.
And you stop it. But these ruins, even though that's what they are still extremely impressive. But this idea of the Reformation.
So it's not like a real working cathedral.
Not at all.
Okay.
The only fully formed and functional building that's still there is a tower called St. Rules Tower or St. Regulus. I know, it's the best name.
St. Rules. Yeah.
That's my DJ name.
God, no.
as a Christian rapper.
All you play are bells.
Yeah. So, no, but it's St. Rule or St. Regulus's Tower. It's this huge...
St. Regulus? St. Regulus Prime.
Okay.
I love it. It's great. It's beautiful.
It's this huge, just perfectly square building that just goes up. You can climb it. I almost had a heart attack. But once you get up there, the views... This country is just the views. It's amazing. The views that they have, and this view from the top of St. Andrew or St. Rule's Tower, you see all of St. Andrews, you see the countryside around it, you see the hills. It's beautiful. And that's actually one of the first places that we're going to talk about, one of the most well-known spirits of St. Andrews.
The hills or the bells?
The tower.
The tower.
Yes.
We got a tower ghost.
St. Rule's Tower. It houses the ghost of a friendly monk. Okay. And here's the thing as well. In the United States and a lot of other places, spirits are to be feared and not trifled with and ignored. Whereas really, the majority of spirits in Scotland are just hanging out. They're just doing their own thing. Well,
I've been here a while.
Yeah. We'll talk about...
I guess this is life now.
We'll talk about one particularly malevolent spirit next episode when we cover Edinburgh. But really, the majority of ones that are there are just there to hang out.
Cool, hardcore.
Bro. The monk of St. Rule's Tower is exactly that. He basically just walks up and down the tower. And if you come across him, you're just going to be like, oh, there's a person cosplaying? Is that what's going on? And he'll say, oh, can I help you up to the tower? And if you say yes, he'll just walk with you up the tower. If you say no... He'll just stand there, and then you just kind of work your way around him. And one individual said that they worked their way around him and realized afterwards that they didn't feel pressure. And honestly, having climbed it, I don't even know how you could work your way around another person. It is so narrow, mm-hmm. and the stairs are so steep. But they realized that as they went up, they didn't feel anything. They didn't interact with anything.
Ah.
And that's just it. It's just this guy. Hanging out in the tower.
I would be that dude that would just bring, like, literally a book full of, like, pictures of dinosaurs and, like, a boombox of modern music and be like, check this out.
Why are you doing this? What is your aim here, Jason?
I just want to, like, catch them up to speed is all.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. Okay. These are dinosaurs that we know about, and this is Kanye West.
Exactly.
And now you know all about 2018. That's an interesting way of doing things. Anyway... I completely
and an orange
lost
man
my train
is president.
Of thought.
What's president, you say?
What's a president? What's America? You don't want to know.
Do you know about tea?
Do you know? We hate tea. Anyway, what was I saying? Monk.
But you know what we
spirit?
Love? Fireworks.
So, thank you.
The truth.
The other aspect of the ghosts here is that they can range in any form. So you can have them be completely translucent or mostly translucent and see-through, or, and Faulkner really makes it sound like this is the more popular or more likely scenario with regards to one individual, or without regards to one individual, they're just normal. They're just solid. They just seem like you and I. And he actually says at one point,
so you can't, like, see through them. They look...
they just look like normal people. And that's why I said if you come across this monk, you're really just going to think that you're meeting a cosplayer.
Do you smell him?
Oh, I don't know. Probably not. Probably not, because they don't physically...
yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're not there. But then again, we also know that smell is associated with every paranormal... memory
as well.
Yep. I was going to say every paranormal encounter from ghosts to aliens and demons and back again. So.
And I was thinking... memory science. And taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that pretty well sums up Not Alone Podcast.
That's about correct.
These ghosts just exist, and he poses an interesting question or an interesting idea, which is he mentioned something along the point of, if you see a ghost, don't try to take a selfie with it. No one has ever taken a selfie with a ghost, but there have been selfies taken wherein ghosts are in them. And it's just this idea that you could be... honestly, you're walking down the street, you're passing hundreds of people, especially in these bigger cities. Not necessarily St. Andrews, it's not huge, but it's still bustling. How do you know that all of them are physical? How do you know that all of them are real and there 100%?
How do I know? They're just not all simulations.
Exactly. Or ghosts. Either way.
Stop it. No.
So you have your friendly little ghost, and a lot of these ghosts are religious. Religion plays such a big part of that culture, but especially in St. Andrews, where, like I said, you have the seat of the Catholic power until the Reformation. And when the Reformation happens...
man, what a ripoff for all those monks.
What?
They die, and they're still there.
And they're still there.
They're just persisting.
They're just hanging out. They're just digging it.
More of the same. Okay.
Dear Lord, we've already been recording for an hour. How is this possible?
Let's wrap it up.
That's it, guys. Man, I thought I was going to have to edit. I'm going to have to edit so much. That's okay, though. I love this thing that we do. So.
Do you?
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So the cathedral. Keep that in mind. We're not done with the cathedral yet. But
tell me more about the state of this cathedral. Is it like covered in ivy?
Ruined. It is basically,
is it rubble, or is it still?
Basically, you have some walls.
Yep.
You have St. Rule's Tower, and okay. You have some spires.
Is there still a bell in the tower, or is it the tower the only thing still like perfectly preserved? Or
the tower, as far as I can recall, still is has the some only. Well, it's it's ancient. Where it's not ancient, but it's very old. Very old. But it's the only like. Physically still in good condition, I guess. It's not been pulled down.
It's usable
because yeah. I climbed it and I almost died.
Did it, were all the steps kind of
the steps were
worn down?
Oh sure, but like they were also insane. They were also insane. It was literally like
super steep.
I was climbing the steps, like I was going hand over hand trying to get up the tower, even That's though crazy. They were just steps.
And you gotta think, like, even though we're just average height for men today,
we would have been
like,
gods to them.
Oh yeah, exactly. Like I think they probably actually climbed. That would make more sense.
I think they did as well. So
was there a slide down the other end?
No. Oh. Unfortunately, you had to walk back down it. I was quite upset about that. The cathedral acts kind of as I would say focal point, as a nexus for the paranormal activity and for the town itself. It kind of radiates out from it, as is what actually happened back in the good old days of the 1100s or even before that. Basically, the idea...
what about the 1100s were good? the good old days where there was the plague.
The plague was good.
We had
swords.
We're
actually going to talk about the plague a lot.
And people were dying just because they were hungry.
Created a really interesting...
oh, yeah.
It, like,
hold
physically
on.
Changed the landscape of cities.
Well, when a third of the population dies.
Yeah. In
St. Andrews. First off, where are you going to put all those bodies?
In St. Andrews, it was half the population that just...
man, they lucked out.
It was crazy. No, that's more than a third.
What percentage is this beer? I guess all I've eaten today was just a donut.
Sure,
so,
that's fine. Carbs and carbs and carbs, man.
Here we go.
Here we go. Anyway, so yeah, the cathedral is like a focal point of paranormal activity, and we'll talk a little bit more about it as we go forward. It factors quite prominently into our main attraction for the evening, which we have not gotten to.
What are we, a stage show?
Right. But one of Faulkner's best stories is, and I think it's pronounced Falconer, but I don't know. I'm going to say Richard. I know how to say Richard. It's a little familiar. Feels a little weird, but it works. So I'm just going to call him Richard from here.
Did you tell him about what we do?
I did at the very end. Okay. At the very end, I was like, oh, we make a podcast. He's like, oh, cool. So he told me to send him a link. Goodbye, Richard. When it comes up. I don't know if he's actually going to listen to it, but whatever.
Hey, totally fair. If you do, remind us how to pronounce your name. We're sorry.
Yeah, please do. So we're just going to call him Richard from here on out. One of Richard's best anecdotes, and the cool thing about it is he's been leading this tour for years. He's gathered these firsthand accounts that he's had with himself and other people on the tour, one of which is concerning the graveyard in the cathedral. A lot of this land has been, it was either originally set aside as a graveyard or it's been repurposed as a graveyard. I don't know how it originally was, but there are graves there. And the graves are just scattered. They're okay. Just here and they're there. They're not grouped in any particular fashion. But one,
they're not nice and neat and tidy like
exactly
that we think of now.
Exactly. And they're not really segmented like, oh, these people go here, those people go there, or anything like that.
Yeah, you don't buy a lot of plots. It was exactly. Just more of a...
Well, you're dead.
This is an empty spot.
You're in the ground now. Yeah. One of his great stories regarding one of his tours was a young boy who, as they were going by the cathedral, basically ran off and started playing around in it. And they had to go and they had to get him out of the graveyard. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were saying the cathedral.
Well, the cathedral and the graveyard are in the same physical space.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to, the point okay, I'm trying okay. to make. And the kid, he goes to one tombstone and he laughs and he runs around it. And then he goes directly to another one down the way, laughs and runs around, then directly to another and another on a path. And as they examine these tombstones, they realize they're all the graves of children. And like I said, these are not all sectioned together. A lot of cemeteries are going to have the graves of children, young children, in the same area. Not so. As well as just with the corrosion or the erosion, I guess is the better word, the erosion of the tombstones, it's nigh impossible to just glance and say, oh, that person died when they were 4 or 5. And yet this kid is just running from child's tomb or child's grave to child's grave. And it's just that kind of a weird thing. It's just indicative of the paranormal nature of this area, as well as the religious nature of it as well. But we're going to come back to the cathedral, okay? Now, I want you to envision this.
Can you stop doing wavy things with your hands and grasping things?
No.
You're air grasping, and it's throwing me off. Okay, what are cathedral, you, moving like an Egyptian?
Okay, check this out. The cathedral, imagine it right in front of you.
Yeah.
You can see it from the street. It's just there.
Okay, there's literally a street in front of me.
And then on the other side of the cathedral is the sea, and it's amazing.
Ooh, okay. I had a forest behind it originally.
No.
Okay, so it's
so
just, okay.
You have the sea behind it, and in front of it is the town. And you're standing
gorgeous
on the road. Now, if you look directly to the right, once you're on the road, in front of the cathedral, what you see, that's fine, what you see
my bad.
Is an area that's known as the Pens, P-E-N-D-S. Now, the Pens served an interesting function. As you look at them, essentially what you see are a series of arches, okay? And they're just extending over the road. And what it was is that the Pens used to be the gatehouse to the cathedral. And so it used it used to have a vaulted ceiling.
That's it. We got to move, Sam.
It's amazing.
We're done.
It's truly amazing.
Let's wrap it up. Let's go get visas. I have to go get a visa.
It's got doors on it, the whole shebang. It doesn't anymore, but it used to. Now, the Pens
are... That'd get a little annoying if it still did.
The Pens are one of the most... haunted areas of the city, according to Richard. Now, on the left, if you're facing...
Makes sense. A lot of people would die there at a gatehouse.
Essentially, it's the place where you were told, no, I'm sorry, pilgrim, you have the plague. You cannot enter the city. You cannot enter this cathedral that you've literally walked across an island to get to. I apologize, but you simply cannot. Now, on the left side of the Pens, you have the cathedral abbey wall. On the right side, you have the wall of a school that is known as St. Leonard's School. It is an international boarding school. It's where my cousins go because they're super, super smart. Super smart and super cool. Okay? So just in case you were thinking your cousins were cooler than mine, they're not.
I'd never thought that.
Good. Don't you dare. Now, St. Leonard's is just as haunted as everything else in this. No, don't you dare. It's just as haunted as everything else. And most likely it has to do with the Pens and this area of plague and defense from the outside world and the people turned away. But St. Leonard's is home to what Richard refers to as the most famous ghost of St. Andrews, which is the Veiled Nun. Now, the Veiled Nun haunts an entranceway that connects the Pens to the school.
So is this the same the nun as you were speaking of before, or is this a different nun? Because no, this nun has the same adjective.
This is the same nun.
Okay.
We'll talk about that adjective in a moment here. Okay, so there's this walkway that connects the Pens to St. Leonard's.
Okay.
It's known as the Nun's Walk. And I found this map as we were picking up... I
saw that.
Yeah, as we were picking up the cousins from school, and it literally says Nun's Walk, named after a ghost. It was amazing.
I was like, okay. Perfect.
This legend is prolific. Now, the origin of the nun itself is debated, but according to a man who we're going to talk a lot about, by the name of William T. Linskill, he was a folklorist and town council member who published a book about the ghost stories of St. Andrews in 1921, the nun was an apparition that was the result of a most disturbing love story. It goes... It goes that in the time of Mary, Queen of Scots, so that would have been about the second half of the 1500s, there was a beautiful woman who lived in St. Andrews. She was of a good breeding, and they cared about this thing back then. They still do.
I just think it's funny. That's how you describe a human.
A horse, yeah.
They're good breeding.
And she was most desirable to be wed by a great deal of suitors who came her way. Now, however, her only true love was the church. And she waved away would-be partner after would-be partner, never allowing herself to become enamored with any one of them. However, in time, she found herself worn down through the sheer persistence of a young man who comes from the East Lothian area.
So what you're telling me is that if at first you don't succeed, wear them down.
Yeah,
it's the moral of this story is horrible.
There's a lot of bad morals in this story.
I mean, it was what time period?
I mean, theoretically, the 1500s, but most likely actually the 1800s. Victorian times is when this story came more about, and then it was recorded. The East Lothian area is where this young man comes from, potentially a place like Edinburgh. Finally, she acquiesces. She says, okay, I will marry you, even though I only love the church. And her family's like, thank God. This is a great guy. I don't know what your problem is. Now, he returns home in order to make the preparations to bring his new bride home once their marriage has been achieved. But the young woman finally makes up her mind for good that she could never desire an earthly marriage when her heavenly marriage to the church was her true heart's wish. Thus, she fled her home with the intention to join a nearby convent. Now, when news of this reached her fiancé, he hastened back to St. Andrews with the intention, see, here's another terrible moral, the intention to seize and marry his fiancé before she had the opportunity to join the church. Yes, pretty
lovely.
Much. And again, everyone was like, great plan. Make it happen. However,
Oh, man. Oh.
However.
Is there a big bad wolf that's really a good person?
When he arrives in St. Andrews, he arrives to a bit of a shock. The woman has realized that really the only thing that the man wants, that any of these suitors want, beyond her good breeding and money, is her beauty. They can find good breeding and money with any other person, but it's this curse of beauty that has led to this perilous, treacherous life. And therefore, she decides, content warning, to mutilate herself.
Clearly, that's the only answer.
She cuts off her eyelids. She cuts off her lips. She slits her nostrils.
Why?
And she brands her cheeks with hot iron.
See, just do the brands and call it good.
I know. It's a little bit of overkill.
It's like one of the creatures from Hellboy.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
This erases her earthly beauty and seals her it for time and all eternity to the covenant of the church. Now the young man is so distraught that his girlfriend's no longer hot that he kills himself.
Dude, she doesn't even have eyelids.
I know. But again, first off, all of this could have been totally avoided by just respecting a person's opinion. If it gets to this point, you don't have to kill yourself over it.
Let's be completely honest, though, is that like all of everything with this story is fairly common themes in storytelling.
Yes, I'm glad you mentioned
that. It's not the first time we've heard this kind of stuff.
It's actually a story that's been told for as long as stories have been told, as we'll mention here in a moment. But the nun, okay, according to Linskill, the nun is now encountered in this nun's walk, named after a ghost. She's said to dress in her black habit, wearing a black veil and holding a lantern, and if one is foolish enough to approach her, she will raise the lantern, pull back her veil, and reveal the gruesome scars that marked her divine will.
Is it only men or also women?
Anybody.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's actually primarily women. We'll see.
This is what you have to do to get a guy to leave you alone, huh?
Great. And at that point, anybody with any brains at all runs away screaming, and so be it. Now, this is a good story, to be sure, but like Jason just said, it is a story that...
But there's not actually any importance to that specific path, right?
Well, that's where she's seen.
No, I get that, but for her and her story and her timeline, path doesn't matter?
I couldn't find it for but I think that St. Leonard's, it's a very old building, but I think it used to be the convent.
Okay. Because like usually when you hear about ghost stories and stuff like that, the place that you see
this
the apparition
is
a moment of trauma of some sort.
No, so and beyond that, even then, that's where it might be that's where the convent is. I actually didn't have time to follow that up. I apologize, everyone. So that's the Nun's Walk.
Okay.
Like you said, though, it is a story, this idea of the pure of heart being chased after by the world and thereby removing themselves from that desire. It's something that's seen time and time again, especially in storytelling of that era and that time period. So important is the role that they put on devotion to the church and purity and chastity. Now, Richard. Richard also said, that seems a little cliche. That seems a little weird. And so he goes through, and like I said, one of the things I love the most about this guy is that he strips it down. He says, okay, so what's actually going on here?
Yeah, just like the nun did to her face.
Sure. Thank you.
Sorry.
What he finds is that he digs deeper and deeper, and he realizes that people have been seeing a nun there. People do see a nun in this location, even to this day. And it really becomes clear for him when he is giving a tour to some of the students who go to St. Leonard's. It's a cooperative or a co-educational school, so it's boys and girls. But it was actually two different girls, and that's why I said it's primarily women who see the nun. Not necessarily, but just the only accounts we have is from these two girls. And they both saw this figure dressed in black standing by the same tree. It's on the, if you're facing the Nuns Walk, it's on the right side. It's the last tree before the gate into the school for anybody who's there. And basically she sees this dark figure standing beside the tree. And she says, this is weird. This is strange. It's probably just somebody.
Is that exactly what she sounds like?
Yeah. It's probably just somebody, because it's American, an international accent. It's an international boarding school. So thank you very much. Okay. It could have been.
Just making sure.
This is strange. It's probably just, and Richard has this great thing he talks about in this moment where he says, the human mind tries to rationalize and tries to explain what it's seeing before it even knows what it's seeing. And so she says it's probably just somebody in a fancy dress or dressed up in something, like cosplaying like a monk. This person is cosplaying something weird. And it doesn't really even occur to them that it's a nun yet. But as they get closer and closer, she realizes that it is wearing a habit, a nun's habit. And what she realizes, though, is she gets closer and closer and closer, and she sees the nun blend into the tree and disappear. And it happens too quickly. It happens so that she can't see the face. She can't see if it's wearing a veil or not. She just remembers this dark image. Now, Richard then, on another tour later on, tells this same story. Which is, again, something cool that happens is things happen on his tour. He talks about them on his tour, and it's kind of like a living thing. It keeps growing. And he's telling this experience to another group of students. And in this one, another girl says, oh, I've also seen something very much like that, except this was obviously a nun, like 100%. As I was coming close to her, I realized straight up that is a nun. And I did see her face, and there were no scars, and she wasn't wearing a veil at all. And he says, see, that makes, in the context of the ghosts, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
And as he goes about and asks people about town, everybody who has seen it, which is not an insignificant amount.
So was there, like, a full-blown nunnery there, then?
Like I said, I think that's where the convent was, yeah.
Okay.
So, yes. Get thee to a nunnery. Nobody in town has actually seen the scars or the veil, even. It all comes from that story.
So that in itself is like its own folklore built onto the ghost story. So it's its own embellishment.
Exactly. You have this truth, and then you have an explanation of the truth by this author, Linskill, William T. Linskill. And we see this happen a lot in his book of stories. Richard.
What time point was that written down again?
Of Linskill's stories? They were the 1920s.
1920s?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to say, if it's like hot off the tails of like the Romantic period,
mm-hmm.
in like Gothic literature and Victorian era, I would not be surprised whatsoever that the story had gotten that sort of embellishment.
It literally is that he was able to chase down, I can't remember exactly, it's in the book, he was able to chase down exactly the like Pulp Fiction story, the Penny Dreadful story,
mm-hmm.
that Linskill synthesized this legend with. It was something that already existed, and he said, oh, that makes for a great addition to my book. And that's something we see with Linskill's book. He has stories about dancing skeletons. He has stories about mutilated nuns. And he has a reputation for embellishing. And he has a reputation for straight out lying at other points.
We are liars, let's be honest.
We are all liars, like, for sure.
We like a good story more than the facts.
For
typically.
Sure. I understand. But you, Jason, of all people, should be able to say, if you're going to try to present like a real thing, you shouldn't be embellishing.
Unless you want to sell it.
Well, and that's really what it came down to, he wanted to sell it, and he sold it, and he sold a lot of it.
There you go.
People loved it.
So,
now,
probably right.
Probably. The free market has spoken. The nun was mutilated. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/ alone. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates, so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. With results like this, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest-rated hiring site in America. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address. That's ZipRecruiter.com/alone. ZipRecruiter's ZipRecruiter.com/alone, A-L-O-N-E. It's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Another intriguing area of St. Leonard School is a house known as Queen Mary's House, or now Queen Mary's Library. Mary, Queen of Scots, lived in St. Andrews for a time. She loved it.
Big library, then. If it was once the Queen's house, it wasn't like a palace.
Okay. It was just like a normal-sized house.
So was it even really her house?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, she lived in St. Andrews for a few months, and that's where she lived when she was there. They didn't construct a new palace or anything. In these walled cities, you have to build up. You can't build out. So that's why buildings are so high. We'll talk about that a little bit more next week, I think. But anyway, St. Mary's House, now St. Mary, or Queen Mary's House, now Queen Mary's Library. According to Faulkner, to Richard, about the same...
You're going
to
keep making the same mistake. I know, I am. Mistake.
Every time.
Every time.
About the same time that the house was remodeled as a library was the same time that these apparitions started seeing. And I told you earlier that the majority of activity is not poltergeist-esque. It's just people seeing things. But it sounds like there is some poltergeist stuff
something
that happens there.
Got disturbed.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't mention exactly what happened. All he says is that the workmen who were assigned to the building simply wouldn't go in at certain points. In a really cool moment, my cousin piped up and said, yeah, and they don't believe in ghosts at all. They're great. They're great, smart young men. I'm so proud of them.
Your line of thought there is great. I just... But, want to point that out real quick and continue.
Thank you. But he like pipes up and he says, yeah, one of our teachers, she says that her dog won't go in that building. Like she's tried to take her dog in there before and he just will not go in that building. It is a super haunted building.
Maybe he just knows there's termites in the rafters.
It could be. Dogs are smart like that. They can assess buildings that
and
way.
Danger.
Now, one of the more unique phenomena happens in this building, though. And it's this idea that on the top floor, in what was Queen Mary's room, there was a mirror. And people have described walking into this room and seeing individuals dressed in period clothing. And these individuals will either acknowledge or not acknowledge the human inhabitant who comes in. And then they will walk. And they will simply walk right through the mirror and disappear. And the mirror itself was finally moved into another classroom, which was something as well, where my cousin was like, yeah, I know that mirror, which is a super cool thing to be able to say. But they had never heard these stories about it.
They eventually look long enough into it and then see
what they truly desire. Oh, I thought we were going like a mirror of Erised sort of thing.
Oh, yeah,
here.
Totally.
Yep. No.
But I'm pretty sure their parents aren't dead, right?
No.
Okay, good.
No. Yeah. And that's one of the more unique reports, whereas everything else is just like, oh, I see a ghost. Oh, I hear a ghost. Oh, there is a ghost. Although there was some time slip sort of activity as well, where people would open doors and they would see full-blown meetings of people in Victorian or even further back era of clothing and be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Close the door and then
why
say,
can't
wait,
it just
that
be like
doesn't.
The 60s? Was there a renaissance here?
There were all these hippies.
that's all I'm
I
saying.
I just opened the door and it was full of hippies. And then they realized that doesn't make sense. They open the door again and there's nothing there, of course. Now, directly down the way from the library is the chapel at St. Leonard's. There's a spirit of a young girl and an older woman who have been reported there, even witnessed by Richard and a group on his tour together. But there's a common thread here that I've concealed from you so far.
Richard?
Well, no, that I didn't conceal.
Ah.
This thread that
Richard's
runs
a ghost?
Through the locations of the pens, of the cathedral, St. Leonard's, and so many other places in St. Andrews, it is the most prolific of the ghost stories of St. Andrews, and has a documented history that reaches back further than any of the other dozens
I swear, if
or
you
hundreds.
Say it's a ghost mongoose.
Its name is Feg. That's Jeff backwards. F-E-G. Feg the ghost.
You're kidding, right?
No. I am kidding, yes.
Oh, okay.
There is no ghost mongoose.
Oh, man. Oh. I was about to murder you.
And there's this thread that runs throughout the town. Okay. It's the mystery of the White Lady and her chamber of corpses.
She brings around her whole chamber.
She takes it with her. It's a mystery that encompasses the historical record of the town and weaves its way through its streets and years. Now, the mystery of the White Lady has been documented for at least the better part of 200 years and starts with one of the remaining structures of the now ruined cathedral. Like I said, we're back at the cathedral. The rear wall of the cathedral is known as Hepburn's Abbey Wall, and it is constructed of a series of 13 towers. 11 of these towers are round, 2 of them are square, and the one square tower is haunted. It is the only tower that still has an accessible external stairway up into it, even though the surrounding structure has been, like I said, taken away and removed for stone by the locals. It is
building walls, probably
pretty well undeniably haunted.
So do you think it's the removal of the stones in the movement that moves the hauntings?
No, maybe it with them. It could be.
Are the stones paranormally charged is what I'm getting at.
No, but they are religiously charged. So there was this really cool thing.
So is it like good luck then to put a stone in your home? Like build your home with a stone from a cathedral?
No.
Is that a thing?
And here's why.
Oh. Is it the opposite?
No. It's just ambivalent. And the reason why is because of the Reformation. Okay. When I say the Reformation, do you know what I'm talking about?
Sure.
Okay. The Reformation was when Catholicism no longer became the only way of Christianity.
Ah.
You have Martin Luther, you have the theses, you have
Church of England.
The Church of England, you have the power to the people, and down with the Catholic Church. And there was a Reformationist or a Protestant Reformation preacher by the name of John Knox. And John Knox, while in St. Andrews, lectured for 3 straight days. 3 straight days.
So he filibustered, is what you're telling me.
Pretty much. He wasn't necessarily filibustering against anything.
He just really was enthusiastic.
He was just really enthusiastic about the downfall of the Catholic Church. As we all are at some point in our lives or another. And so he lectures for 3 straight days. When he finishes, the people are so energized that they bust into the cathedral and they pull down the icons of the saints and all of the statues and all of the treasures,
so
and they just destroy it and throw it into the sea.
So they rioted after. So people listened to this dude for 3 days. Okay, wow, patience.
He did it.
That must have been the only thing going on in town.
Pretty much.
And okay. So, did you see this guy? He keeps talking about it.
This is when it loses its seat of power, of Catholic power and all of this. And that's why it's just neutral, because it was realized to be simply a building. And there's nothing holy and religious about a building. That's kind of the whole point. Not the whole point, but that's a major point of the Reformation, is that these symbols, these icons, these buildings, these statues, they're not what puts a person in contact with God. the Bible is. And so that's why they pulled it down. But it was still a functional and operational church. And so they said, don't wreck the bones of the church, just wreck the idols and all of that. Or the, not the idols, sorry for any Catholics that were offending. The images of the saints. And,
I mean,
and
it's not like us tearing it down. We didn't do it. We're just talking about it.
We're just talking about it. But it's, and so it's just neutral. And that's why they said, okay, take the stones, build it. However, there's one specific disturbable of stones that has to do with this white lady and her chamber of corpses, which is what we're talking about here. This haunted tower, okay, it stands as a silent sentinel.
Whoa, same tower.
Not St. Rule's Tower.
Different tower. What's this one called?
This one is called the Haunted Tower.
So
or
creative.
The Virgin's Tower or Mary's Tower.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, Mary has a house and a tower.
Right? It's at the back of the cathedral.
I gotta meet this Mary lady.
She's dead. She was beheaded. Bloody Mary and all of that, you know.
Oh, that one.
Yeah.
Good.
Anyway, so it stands at the back of the cathedral courtyard on this abbey wall. Okay. Now, it overlooks on one side the North Sea, and on the other side, the ruins of the grandest cathedral Scotland has ever seen. Although the original structure of the building has since crumbled, figures are still seen tracing their routes through this area, and even on the second story of this area, appearing to be walking through midair. And the most prominent of these spirits is the aforementioned White Lady. Now, this tower seems to act as a nexus for her spirit. Whenever she's seen, it's usually leading back, walking back to the tower, or disappearing into the tower itself. References of the White Lady can be found as far back as the Victorian times, and again, she's popularized by the work of William T. Linskull. But even though Linskull was seen as not
less
dishonest, but yeah, exaggerating in a lot of respects, he dedicated a lot of time and energy to trying to solve this mystery of the White Lady. Now, in a conversation recorded with a close friend of his, Linskull describes his discovery of the legend of this woman. He and his buddy were playing golf. St. Andrews is where golf is from. They made it at, you can play on like the first ever golf course there. It's pretty cool. Unless you're a woman, which is super sexist. You can't, if you're a woman, you can't play on the old course.
Still.
Get over it.
Whoa.
Get over it, guys.
Sheesh.
Women can golf pretty well. Dang well, I'll say it.
Better than Sam.
I might ruffle some feathers here, but I'm going to say it. Women can golf, okay? As they're playing golf.
Yeah.
Linskull and his friend have a conversation about St. Andrews.
Yeah, it's weird. Usually when I golf, I drink.
Do you?
Oh, yes.
What the hell?
Do you?
I don't think that's normal.
It's plenty normal. Play 18 rounds, you're going to have a few beers.
Can you take beer onto the golf course?
Yeah, absolutely.
Whoa. This is a whole new world.
Golf carts, baby. Golf carts. Or at least
drink
maybe...
and drive, but only if it's a golf cart.
Yeah, dude. No rules on that road. Maybe you're not supposed to, but it just happens anyway.
Okay. At least you can accept that.
Okay.
They're talking about St. Andrews. They're talking about the lore of St. Andrews. And suddenly the friend exclaims, oh, she was the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
Really?
And
this
Linskull
reminds
says,
me of so much of another one that we talked about.
And Linskull says, what are you talking about? Are you talking about a friend, a family member, a business partner, a professional acquaintance? Who are you talking about? And he says, no, I'm talking about a ghost. Dun, dun, dun.
I love it.
Now, this ghost, the most beautiful ghost that anybody had ever seen.
Clearly.
Linskull was excited at hearing this prospect of what he referred to in his own words as something new and spicy, as if talking about an addition to Taco Bell's menu, as opposed to the most beautiful ghost anyone had ever seen.
That Doritos shell was amazing, okay?
Spicy. Now, the friend describes walking about the old town one evening in late January or late February after a good dinner, as he dwelt on the history of the place, of all the strange tales he had heard of it. And suddenly, brushing past him, is a woman. The most beautiful woman he's ever seen. He really drives this point home.
Yeah, yeah.
She has a long flowing white dress. She has long flowing black hair that goes down below her waist. She has out of a pocket or in her hand an object of gold, maybe a rosary, maybe something else. And she has white gloves on. And she brushes past him as if she is a person with a place to go. He, not being creepy at all, decides that since it's late and there could be creepers out, he should follow her and make sure she gets home safe.
Yeah, okay, sure. That's what he was doing.
So he follows from a distance. She moves normally. Everything seems normal. As she rounds a corner, he loses sight of her for a moment. And he speeds up, rounds a corner again, and he sees her there now at the back wall of Hepburn's Abbey, or of the back of Hepburn's Abbey's wall, making her way to this tower, which everyone knows is a haunted tower. Everybody knows it. And this is a point that's stressed, is that even before this story, Linskill knew that there was something weird about this tower. Sailors, especially, would not walk by this tower. And when Falconer...
Yeah, well, sailors were superstitious.
Superstitious.
Squared. Super squared stitious.
Even as late Richard Falconer found, even as late as 1957, children in primary schools of the area were told not to go by this tower, especially in the dark, but to avoid it whenever possible. Everybody knew this tower is haunted, and therefore, as Linskull's friend watches this woman walk through the wall and into the tower, he realizes it was no woman he saw, but the most beautiful ghost anyone's ever seen.
Whoa!
Whoa! Now...
Oh, man. Oh, boy. This is great.
Linskull is enraptured, and he says, you know there are weird things about that tower. He says, I know it. But I'm not done yet. I have another story to tell you. And Linskull says, great. Something new and spicy for the repertoire. And his friend then tells him about another night. It was months later when he fell asleep too quickly at a guest house.
Yeah, did a certain ghost come and visit him?
And he had left his candle burning by his nightstand. That's how he knows he fell asleep too quickly. And in the middle of the night, he wakes with a start, and he sees there at the end of the bed the most beautiful ghost anyone has ever seen.
Oh, man. She wanted to come back and thank him for walking her home.
Probably. And she just smiles at him. And now...
That's so creepy.
Now, but not a creepy smile. A pleasant smile. The kind of smile that might be new and spicy.
Look at this little perv.
Yeah. And then, though, she does this. And as opposed to before, she was walking, basically, walking about town. Now she glides backwards. And she glides through the locked door at the back of the room. I did that for the sound effects. I hope it worked out well. And the door is locked, and he knows it's locked, and so he grabs his key, and he grabs his candle, and he rushes into the hallway, so worried that he's going to have lost her, when in reality she's standing right there. And she's floating. And she smiles, and she beckons with one hand towards the gallery room. And then she floats away. And in the morning,
So the jig is up. Essentially, she knows that he knows she's a ghost.
Everybody knows that she's a ghost. Yes.
And now she's like, all right, fine. I'll be a ghost.
Okay, I'll be a ghost now. Yes. As the morning breaks, he speaks with the owner of the house. He was staying there as a, you know, she's a friend or something. I don't know.
Yeah, Airbnb. I get it.
Airbnb, pretty much. And he says, could I see your gallery room? This is something that was very common. Paintings were a huge deal, both for establishing wealth, establishing a right to your lineage and things like that. And so they go into the gallery room and he sees there a picture of the most beautiful ghost he's ever seen.
I can't handle all this, Sam.
And he says,
I just can't.
He says, my God, who is this woman? And the owner of the house says, oh, that is, her name's Marie. And she was one of Mary, Queen of Scots, ladies in waiting. And she fell in love with a minstrel. But then the minstrel got beheaded. And then she was sad.
That would ruin a love story there.
She was sad for the rest of her days. And then she died. And that's all we have to go on about that. And Linskull says,
That's
all I got to say about that most beautiful ghost. And Linskull says, wow, that is a story. And he says, I know. And then they go back to golfing and being sexist.
You're right. It is a story.
Now, when it comes to this tower, like I said, people avoided it like the frickin' plague because they had the plague. It was known to be haunted. And the sort of things that people saw there very well matched up with this idea of a ghostly occupant. One of the most common things that was reported around this time and is still reported even to this day, they have a loophole for archers at the base of the tower, the middle of the tower, the top of the tower. At the base of the tower, they have a loophole and an arm will reach out of the loophole covered in a white glove and it will wave or beckon. If you're smart, you ignore it. If you're not smart, you try to help it. People think that somebody gets trapped down there or something like that is the narrative. And so they go and they try to take hold of the arm. I don't know how they're going to pull him through a loophole anyway. But when they take hold of the arm, one of two things happens. Either A, it goes right through, or B, it makes contact and then it pulls.
Ooh.
And attempts to pull them in.
Are we sure it's just not someone playing tricks?
Yeah, it's not like a really easy place to get to.
Okay.
So now on his tour,
but if you're dedicated,
true, on his tour, he doesn't even make this as big a deal of the white lady. He talks about her for sure. But on his tour, we go by this tower. Okay. And he invites us to put our arms into the loophole and to try to shake hands with the ghost. And he does this really smart, scientifically accurate or scientifically conscious thing wherein he says that you shake hands with a ghost. And we all try it. And of course, nothing happens. Not of course, but unfortunately, nothing happens.
When was this tour? Were you at night?
No, it was not. It was in day. But he made a big point about saying that because of the nature of these things, so many of them happen in broad daylight anyway. The nun is often seen in broad daylight, as is this white lady. So just because you're going on the tour in daytime doesn't mean you're missing out or anything like that.
But it's not the witching hour, Sam.
I know, right? So he says,
there's the thing. Any hour. There's a witching hour somewhere.
It's the witching hour. It's like 5 o'clock somewhere. No, exactly. It's the witching hour somewhere. Someone make that into a bumper sticker, please. So we put our hands in. Unfortunately, nothing happens. We do see coins. People throw coins in there.
For luck?
Yeah, but then he explains that you're not going to get luck for it, so don't throw your coins in. And that he said it was quite empty. There was a good amount of coins, but apparently it really fills up. And then the council comes and they take out all the coins and they give it to charity. So that's pretty nice.
It's like a normal fountain.
Yeah, pretty much. So he says you shake hand with a ghost. No one does, unfortunately. And as we go down the road, now headed towards the castle, he actually tells us that it's a little bit different. And he never he never explains what actually happens until this point, until everyone's put their arms in. What will actually happen, as opposed to a handshake, is you'll put your arm in and something will come and hit your hand as if to bring it down. And then some people have even described, again, that grabbing and that pulling motion. He says that there was another young child, not as young as the first one, I'd guess probably 8 or 9, who had this happen to him. And he put his arm in and he screamed and he ran down the road. The tour group caught back up to him. He said, "What did you experience?" And he says exactly that. "It felt like somebody hit my hand, like hit it down." And so in that way, he does this.
How rude.
Kind of, I know. He does this kind of a scientific method sort of a thing where you're not giving the answer away and you're instead trying to make sure that what does happen is what's happening and you're not influencing anybody's behaviors. So, and that's something I really dig about him and something I really like.
Well, I mean, he's still telling you that there's a possibility that your hand's going to get shaken by a ghost.
Yeah, but there's...
if you stick your hand in a hole.
There's a difference between shaking someone's hand and your hand getting hit. If I said, come shake my hand...
You're still having a physical...
Sure. Like, you're expecting something
experience to happen to your hand, is what I'm getting at.
Right. I agree with you.
If you just were like, hey...
Put your hand in there.
Bitch, you won't stick your hand in that hole.
There's money. Grab it.
Yeah. Go reach for it. And then something happens. And they're like, oh... That is science.
That is science. Thank you. I will let everyone know what science is. Now, back to Linskill. Later on...
This guy.
Linskill was invited to dine with another friend of his.
Are we sure? Are we even positive about that? Can we be certain about this man's experiences with others? Because we're not sure about these ghost stories.
We can be pretty sure of what he says about the white lady, especially because...
Because he didn't feel like he had to fancy it up?
Well, we'll see. Let me get through this here. So he has dinner with a friend, an elderly lady. He says it multiple times that it's annoying to talk to old women because they get off track. They repeat themselves. He really hates it, but he needs information. And that just tells you the kind of person that Linskill is.
The great news is that apparently they'll probably repeat that information again for him.
It's true. Now... She repeats a bit of what the other friend told him. The woman was a beautiful lady who was in love with a minstrel, and he died, and now she's sad all the time. But she relayed as well a personal account of seeing the phantom. Having seen the woman glide through the air, her and her friends are walking along this back wall. They see the woman glide through the air, and at that point, they think she's walking on the tower walls. One of them erroneously says she's sleepwalking. I don't know how that would have happened. The other people think that she's just an adventurous youth. And they say, oh no, she's going to fall. So they go and they rush towards her in order to catch her if she does. And sure enough, as she comes to this haunted tower, she just walks right into it. Now,
did she not see it coming?
Well, and then she disappears.
Oh,
thank you.
Okay.
Months later, this woman is sitting and brushing her hair, completely removed from the event, when she sees the face of this woman appear in her mirror. And it scared her so much she fainted.
Okay, that's a big scare.
Yeah, yeah. And then she had to get a new mirror. she really did. She says that.
I believe that.
Now, she also described...
Wasted a whole mirror.
She described the woman and her face as the most beautiful ghost anyone had ever seen.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
These stories...
This is like the most interesting man in the world. She's like, it's the most beautiful ghost in the world.
These stories spoke to Richard for many reasons. As a historian and a folklorist, they show some kernel of truth. And even if Linskill was widely known as having a flair from the dramatic... It's believed that at least some of his stories, like we said, of the Veiled Nun, have that kernel of truth. Now, he's done decades of legwork. He's done exploring and fact-finding and research. But what we're missing is Richard's origin story.
God, okay. What set Richard on this path, Sam?
And the reason... that Richard knows that this is not something that Linskull just made up for the book is because he has saw seen
the most beautiful
beautiful ghost in the world. He,
oh my gosh,
in his youth saw the White Lady twice and then has seen her multiple other times, especially on tours, as he's giving them. The first time was in 1978 when he would have been about 13 with a group of friends. She was in the cathedral grounds, and in what used to be the old courtyard, there are three archways in a row. She was essentially standing in the left archway. They saw her. They said, "What the heck's going on there?" And then she disappears and reappears in the right archway, and then disappears again. Now, after that, in 1981, so 3 years later, he and a group of friends see her again, and that one... He didn't really talk about what happened there, but he has seen this thing, and he saw it before he knew all of these legends. He had maybe heard tell of it, this and that, but it was before he had done his research. He was just a kid. Now, as he chased this story down, he found more details, strange details that were seemingly corroborated without any previous knowledge of the witness. People describe seeing her in the pen, standing on the walls of the old gatehouse, or the walls of St. Leonard's. They saw her walking about the grounds of the cathedral, and of course, in and around the modern, or in and around the haunted tower. And the descriptions were always the same. In the modern accounts that he's collected, she is always wearing a veil, but the veil can be removed to show the most beautiful face of the most beautiful ghost that anyone's ever seen.
I want to see this ghost. I want to see this ghost be like, "Yo, you got a great, 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 great grandniece."
Jason's single and ready to party. Yeah, so she's always wearing a veil. She's always wearing white calfskin gloves. If she is seen at night, the people who see her report as if the image, the shape of a person, as if one went to the moon and cut from the moon a shape of a person. That is how radiant she is. She is as bright as the moon.
So she real shiny.
She real shiny.
All right.
As bright as the moon on the night.
What was it? Bright as the moon.
Mm-hmm. And while these accounts have gone far in solidifying the idea of the White Lady, some account or okay. And while these go far as solidifying the idea of the White Lady as a real, very beautiful ghost, they don't explain what she is, or why she is, or how she is.
She just is.
She just is. Now, when we return back to Linskull, we find a very strange detail reported in the majority of the stories with the White Lady. And this is why we think that he's being more honest about it here. Is he talks about how...
Man, this guy just flips and flops.
He talks about how the tower was opened and how people found this chamber of corpses when it was. Let me see what I want to do.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the chamber of corpses.
Yeah, right? Chamber
of corpses. We just keep talking about the most beautiful ghost ever.
Now, according to Linskull's Book of Ghost Stories... The chamber was opened.
Mm.
Enemies of the air, beware. No, that's Harry Potter again. And when it was opened, they found a mass of coffins, about 10 different coffins, one of which was lacking a lid. And laying in this coffin was the unnaturally preserved body of a very beautiful woman wearing a white dress with long black hair. Now, since that day in 1978, Richard has spent all of his life, pretty much, pursuing the truth of these stories in Linskull's book, trying to understand what happened. And as he pursues it, he actually comes to realize that some of this is completely true. Not only the apparitions and the visions themselves, but he finds, through sources that are really too numerous to be listed here, unless we just want to make this into me reading newspaper accounts, he finds very well-documented accounts of this exact thing happening. Basically, there are workmen who are working to restore the tower when a tool falls into it. they remove some bricks to get the tool, and voila, here you have a chamber of corpses. You have this woman laying in her coffin without a lid. These things are corroborated by multiple people through a newspaper called the St. Andrew's Citizen, from a priest who was a passerby to stonemasons who were known to be working on the actual account. We know that this actually happened. And these stories, combined with the personal experiences that Richard and so many others have had, are what create this urgency to find out who this person is. Now, the first accounts come from 1860. That's when supposedly the tomb was originally opened by accident and then resealed. Now,
whoops, wrong door.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Sorry to disturb you.
8 years later, the chamber is opened again. And it is opened in a way that allows more people, whether it was an academic or a religious or whatever thing, more people to actually go in and to see the chamber and to see the corpse. And you have all of these eyewitness accounts. Yeah. Now, the chamber is then closed for 20 years until 1888. And when it's opened again in an expedition that is led by Linskal himself, the body is gone. There may or may not, right?
They saw the most beautiful
ghost corpse in the world. The most beautiful corpse in different modes of being. Yeah, and this is the most beautiful corpse in the world.
Yep.
There may or may not have been other corpses there. I think some of them are missing. Basically, what he talks about, what he talks about are skulls, bones, severed hands, severed heads. These things kind of just rolling around, but the coffin of the woman is gone. But where did it go?
Away.
And Jason, you kind of just said it. Again, this is even though it's a very prestigious college, a college town, there's a university there. And at this point in time, universities need something.
And mascot?
What they need are dead bodies. To study medicine. To study anatomy.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Whoa.
This story of this perfectly preserved woman in the tower was circulated throughout town. So, most likely, the resurrection men, as they were called.
Oh, goody.
Right? Broke into the tower, took the body, and sold it to the university. The price for one of these bodies was
probably
a year's wages for an average laborer.
Yo, Sam. Mm-hmm.
Right?
You want to go grave robbing?
Right? We'll actually talk a little bit more about grave robbers and some specific ones next episode when we talk about Edinburgh and Greyfriars Kirkyard. But it seems to have infected this area as well. Now...
Oh, man, we're not done talking about ghosts yet.
We're just about there.
Okay.
A little more. Just a little more.
Tell me more about your ghost adventures, Sam.
Now, this body, the white lady, this person who has been seen and seen and seen throughout the ages. Earlier accounts go back to the 1820s before they even really knew that there were people in this tower. But we don't know where she's gone and we don't know who she is. And that's what Richard Faulkner was working to try to figure out. Now in 2014, Faulkner met with a woman who claimed to know the granddaughter of William T. Linskal. Now, the woman's name was Jillian. And he met with her as well as two other women in the Preservation Trust Museum in St. Andrews. Now, this granddaughter of Linskal's had one day opened a biscuit tin and found a mummified hand.
Man, I bet that biscuit tin company just went way under.
Out of business. Now, this
Wendy's
occurred...
had it rough with that one finger.
Everyone lost their mind. This occurred
in... I love their chili.
1929, which was shortly after William's death. Now, when confronted, Linskal's widow, the girl's grandmother, doesn't want to talk about it. As you can assume.
Okay.
She says, we're not going to talk about this. And yet... pestering and pestering and wearing down and wearing down. Finally, she tells her this account. And this is the account that was given to Richard Faulkner by the friend of the granddaughter who heard it. Okay, so that's the chain of custody here.
One and then night, from us, and then
to you. One night, her grandfather returned quite late, after golfing and drinking with his fellow academics.
Like one does.
And as he does, he creates quite a ruckus. The grandmother herself, her name's Jessie, she hears him yelling and somebody else yelling at him. And she goes downstairs and sees the maid yelling at the master of the house, which of course is not what is done until she realizes that the master of the house has a corpse with him. It is the corpse of a white lady dressed in a white dress with long hair, the most beautiful corpse of the most beautiful ghost in the world. Jason is walking away now.
Sam, you can wrap this up, right?
And essentially, understandably enough, Jesse freaks out and says, I don't know where that came from, but put that thing back where it came from, or so help me. And he says, okay, but here's the thing. Here's what happened. Okay, we were just golfing. We were drinking. We were eating. We were having a good time. And then I said, do you guys want to see the Haunted Tower? And they said, yes, we want to see the Haunted Tower. So I got to the Haunted Tower. And then I said, okay, I'm going to tell you about the tower. And I climbed up on the tower. But as you know, my dear wife, I'm quite a heavy gentleman. And I fell through the roof of the tower. And in that moment, he decided, in the strangest seizing of a moment that I've ever seen, he decided to become a grave robber.
Why not?
That was Jason from the couch. He's left. He's sitting over there, leaving me to do this all myself. That's fine. Where was I? Yes. He and the group of friends take the body from the tower. And they take it back to his home. And this is where they are now. The maid has threatened to quit. And I'm sure that Jesse has threatened a lot of other things. He says, I have just committed a very serious crime. Please give me a moment to think. He takes the body and he hides it in the garden and assumes everything's going to be fine. The next day, the gardener finds it and threatens to quit. And he says, okay, I will deal with it. And he deals with it. And we don't know how he deals with it. All we know is that the corpse is gone. But in the moving and the shifting and the grave robbing and all of that, the hand just falls off. Now, this is a far-fetched story, to be sure. The idea of Linskull as a grave robber is beyond even the realm of probability for his character. Until one of the women at the preservation museum that he is being told the story at says, wait right here. She goes upstairs and she brings back a photograph of William T. Linskull holding a mummified hand. Now, it's possible that he just found this hand somewhere. It's possible that it's a different mummified hand. It doesn't necessarily prove anything, but it does to me. And honestly, I think that's probably our most likely situation. However, as Faulkner goes about, he learns that the hand itself is actually in the possession of the university. And as he continues to research, he realizes that they also have a foot at the university, a mummified foot that has been labeled in its boxes as the foot of the White Lady. And when he meets with a senior lecturer of anatomy, a woman named Susan Witter, she brings him something that he was not expecting. And that is a severed, mummified head. Something that almost nobody knew existed. She brought it. He took photographs. It's all in the book. All of this is in the book. The photographs of the hand, of Linskull with the hand, of the head, of the foot. And it creates an extremely compelling case for grave robbers, whether it's Linskull himself or somebody else, robbing the grave of the white woman, taking her to the university, selling her there, And then she's used in lectures and all of that from this day until her last day, which was a very long time ago. Now, it is a matter of record that in 1781 there was an Egyptian mummy that was presented to the museum. However, it is also a matter of record that the mummy was kind of in crappy condition, which seems like a really crappy thing to write about a gift that you just got of an Egyptian mummy.
But gift horse, right?
Right, in the mouth. But these items that he saw and have documented are so well preserved that it is actually more likely not to be matching that description. As we speak, he's pursuing DNA testing, trying to make sure that everything actually fits together. Everything actually belongs to each other there. But at this point in time, that's about the best that we know of the White Lady herself.
Oh no, how will I ever go on without knowing more?
Now there is the question of who is the White Lady?
Oh, good. And I'm so glad we get to answer that question.
That's something, Jason, I'm sure you'll be just so sad to hear. We can't really say too much on.
Oh, no. Faulkner, how will I survive?
Faulkner is convinced.
This wonder.
Due to the burial conditions, the locations, her coffin, the other coffins, and all these different things. Convinced that it is the body of a local saint that was hidden during the Reformation to stop the people from throwing her bones into the sea, which is what they were doing. He's not the only one to think that. There are a lot of articles, again, from the end of the 1800s, when this was really making the rounds, a lot of articles that support that, and there are ones that say that that's not the case at all. There are ones that say that it's the daughter of a ancient princess of Scotland.
Naturally.
Naturally.
So wait, wouldn't it just be an ancient princess of Scotland?
Wow. And then there is also the idea that it could be Queen Mary's maid of honor. Unfortunately. Jeez, Alou.
I'm alive.
Unfortunately, we simply do not know. And we may never know. But that's the story of the White Lady of St. Andrews, the most prolific ghost, the one that's been cited the most by the most amount of people, and the one that has, I mean, just the facts to back it up. The idea that this same individual was reported as a ghost, then discovered in an open coffin for whatever reason, it's compelling, to say the very least. And in Scotland, that's how the ghosts are. They just live around you. They live with you. And it's something quite beautiful in its own way. So, Jason's sick of this. He wants to go home. I'm also kind of sick of this and ready to go home.
I'm pretty tired of this White Lady.
Well, we're done with it.
Because every time you say White Lady, I think it's a nice day for a white wedding for some reason. I don't know.
In any case, that's all I got for St. Andrews. We'll be back next week with more stories of Edinburgh, of Greyfriars Kirkyard, of the Mackenzie Poltergeist, and things like that. But that's all I've got for this week. Jason?
Sam, what else do we need to wrap up? Anything else going on?
I think we'll do all the thanks and stuff next week.
Wonderful.
Well, so.
So in that case, I did it last week.
Whether you are wandering around Scotland in the dead of night, trying not to be a creeper while following the most beautiful ghost you've ever seen, or you're Jason and you're ready for me to stop talking, you are not alone.